Wellness begins where play, pleasure, and the parasympathetic meet. You were born to be you, and you were born to be well. Your body is always trying to find its way back to health. Now, here's the host of Your Healing Playground with Dr. Tina Coopersmith.
Welcome, my friends, wherever you are in the world and whatever time of day it is. You are listening to Your Healing Playground. We are on the Inspired Choices Network. I am Dr. Tina Coopersmith, your host, and this podcast is dedicated to healing, unique healings, and healing for the individual. It's about helping you find your personal journey because there are so many ways to heal, and we heal through play because we can only truly heal physically when we are in a healing state of being. And healing state means that the parasympathetic is activated and not fight, flight, freeze, or please. So today, let me tell you, we have an amazing guest. We have Michelle Palermo, and we are going to talk a lot today about what's called narrative medicine. Narrative medicine is about healing through story. And we call today the intersection of story and healing. And it's about writing your story, rewriting your story, editing your story in whatever way, shape, or form that means for you. So it could be music, it can be art, it could be dance, but it could be words. And the words can be on a stage or on a screen. So today we're going to talk with Michelle, and I just want to start with when does journaling become writing a book or a memoir or a TV show? You have a brand new TV show, Middlehood. It's fabulous.
Thank you.
I advise everyone to watch it. It's so fun.
It's on Amazon Prime Video, and it's on Plex TV. It's pay-per-view on Amazon with no commercials, and then it's on Plex with commercials, and it's going to be on YouTube TV later this summer. So we're
excellent.
Be everywhere, I think.
It is everywhere. And so let's start with, you're in the entertainment industry and you've been in the entertainment industry for years. So tell our listeners a little bit about how you got into the entertainment industry as a kid. Even did you know that's what you were going to do growing up and all that?
Well, I thought I was going to be an actor. I was an actor originally. I went to school for acting and came out here in my 20s. I had a theater company in Washington, D.C. In my early 20s, and then came out here in my later 20s. And I'd had a little part in broadcast news that filmed in D.C. And I was so excited because I was going to be on screen with William Hurt. And it was the time to come out to California. And let's just say then I became a writer a couple of years later. Acting is a very difficult journey, and I just decided I had written a play and kind of moved into the writing side of it, and, you know, worked in television for a bit, did a lot of stage plays, wrote some features, and then kind of had a life aside from that. I call that my accidental life, where I got into politics and was the chief of staff for a first lady. And kind of took any opportunity work for Martha Stewart that came to me because I didn't really want to have like a real job so that I could always write. And so I had all these interesting opportunities that presented because I was never really looking for a full-time career. And eventually came, you know, did DC, New York, and came back to LA in 2018 and had a very personal experience with my family. That kind of was, my mother was ill and I was spending a lot of time with my family. I was living at my brother's house. We had just moved back from New York. My husband was working remotely in Sacramento. And so it was just this very odd moment in time where I was living sort of with my original family as a group. Mm-hmm. And I had this moment of like, what am I doing? You know, I'm middle-aged. I'm supposed to be in a different place. And I started having conversations with people about this. And I realized that kind of everybody feels a version of this in middle age. And I thought, that's interesting. I want to write about that. And when I started to write Middlehood, I really didn't know what it was going to be. I didn't know if it was going to be a book or a play or just a stream of consciousness. I had no idea. And it started to form as a television show, which a lot of what I write does. And I wrote the whole show, the whole first season. And then, you know, there's a whole other story to getting it up on the air, which is a whole other thing. But, you know, so it was really a need to, I mean, jokingly, I said I was either going to write about this experience or end up in a, you know, institution talking to psychiatrists.
Okay. So tell us, let's dive into that since we are about healing, right? And so tell me, you know, there's that fine line between sanity and insanity, right? And familial family dynamics, right? Of conformity, nonconformity, whose role, the mother's role, the father's role, the sibling's role, the role of an adult in a family, but you're now a sibling in an adult role. Like, the morphing of roles. I joked with my kids when they hit their 20s. I said, hey guys, I don't have a role model. My mom died when I was 24. I don't know how to be a mom. I don't have a role model for an adult mom. And my grandmother really wasn't, she was in our lives, but not really. So we have to negotiate how to do this, right? Because I don't know how to do this. And whether you have a great mom or a bad mom, you either copy or try not to copy, right?
Right, right,
and,
yeah.
And we do both, right? So our gifts come often from what we didn't get in childhood too, right? And so our biggest gifts to humanity are the things we didn't get fulfilled. And the only way we can feel them is by giving them away.
Oh, yeah. I love that. That's true. And by the way, how evolved of you to tell your children that you didn't know how to be a mom because yours passed? Because I think a lot of people just kind of try their best and fail. I like to think that everybody's trying their best.
Yeah.
All the time, rather than assign all sorts of, you know, other things to it. But to be honest with your kids, I think I don't have children, but, you know, I am an adult child, as they say. Yeah. And to be honest with your kids is very, very difficult. I think it's very difficult to say, you know, I don't know how to negotiate this. I don't know how to do this. You know, for me, that experience was weird because I have, you know, grown up and have relationships with my adult brothers, you know, in varying forms. But they're adult relationships, but somehow when my parents are there, we just revert right
yes.
back to the relationships we had when I was 12. I'm always 12. You
yeah,
know?
It's a classic. I think there's something about puberty that we get stuck, right? In that individuation stage. They even say like the music you listen to when you're a teenager is how you vibrate. Right.
And that's it's really like, true. Yeah.
It becomes the music that is your music. And it's, I realize now as I think about it, as I'm trying to do consciousness work and growing and spiritual work, I'm changing the music I listen to.
Really?
Expanding my repertoire, not listening to the stuff I love, but expanding the repertoire. And I don't know. I just thought about that as we're talking. How does that change my body, or is my body changing? Because, so who knows? So, I want to get back to your story. And you, so you're in this uncomfortable situation living with a sibling as an adult, kind of being homeless, right?
Yes,
not homeless,
a bit
but,
homeless,
right?
Looking for a house. Let's just
right.
put it that way.
Yeah, but you're yeah. unmoored. You don't yeah. have your own place, right? And that happens to people. They move cities, and family takes them in. That's what we're supposed to do in the world, right? Is And in the old days, people lived with extended families all the time, right? So did you start writing as a journal experience? Did you start writing knowing you were writing something for entertainment? Tell
No.
me how the process happens.
So, okay. So I wrote sort of after the fact. So I was at my mother's house and, you know, with my parents. And I remember this very specific evening, which has actually morphed into a moment in middlehood. It was a little different, but I was having an argument with my father and my brother joined in and we were all yelling at each other, you know, and his poor wife and kids. And, you know, it was like, we have to do this every single time y'all get together. Right. And so at one point I like got up from the table and I stormed out of the room, went into the room I was staying in and slammed the door and sat on the bed. And I was like, okay, this is ridiculous. I have just gone to my room and, you know, I'm 50 something years old. This is insane. And so it was during that time, it was actually my niece, Julia, the daughter of my brother I was staying with, that I was talking about, like, oh, I've just gotten my apartment. I'm really thinking about, you know, I need to write something. And Julia, who had been staying with me, she goes, you really need to write something about you and grandpa, because that's a really interesting dynamic. And I was like, you know, Julia, I don't think I want to write about me and grandpa. Grandpa and I, you know, that's something I live on a daily basis. She goes, I should think about it. And so I started to just flow it. It wasn't really written as, it was like more of stream of consciousness. There's a book that I love, Natalie Goldman's Writing Down the Bones. And it's a book that I gift people regularly. I'll send you a copy if you don't have it. It's wonderful. And it's all about just like spit out writing, like just when something's in you, you just sit down, and it's usually pen to paper.
Yes, yes, it has to be. I can't journal on a computer, or I can, but it's so much more cathartic pen to paper.
And there is something about this connection between the heart and the arm and the pen and the paper that is very, very, you know, emotional. Yeah. I just started to write about, like, you know, thoughts and conversations, and, you know, and then I have a diary that I got when I was 10 years old that I took out and started to read. It was like from 10 to 17.
Whoa.
And I started to read and see some parallels. And I thought, you know, interestingly enough, we're all kind of trying our best to wade through these relationships, not realizing that there's been a whole past that we've all lived differently. And we've all started it differently. Whereas I think when I think of my family, I'm the star and everybody else is supporting roles. That's not true. Everybody is the star of their own family story, right?
Right, right.
That started to influence me, and the past started to influence me, and it started to come together as a reflection of how in any given moment, when you're sitting in a family or friends that you've had for a long time or whatever it is, people with history, you're not remembering the same history.
There is not one reality.
No, and I'm not even talking Rashomon, where everybody remembers a different version of the same history. Like, you're remembering different times of your family because there were just different times that influenced you, you know? And I realized during that time that it was at the time of my journal around 12, 13, 14, that I keep going back to with my family because that was the most influential time for me with my family. Mm-hmm. When I was a tween, right? And an early teen, I was steeped in it. Everybody was home. You know, I have a brother who's 4.5 years older than me. Then my next brother is 5 years younger than me. So, and then I have a brother who's 8 years younger than me. So, but that was the moment when everybody was home, when everybody was like functioning already as a human, and it just sticks there. And so whenever I'm with my family, I go back to that place. And that is sort of where I started writing from. I started writing from, like, why am I always 12? Why do I never stop being 12?
I love that. And it's a perfect time for us to take a break. I want people to think about where in their childhood they go back to and are stuck. What are the years that are seared in your memory that you need to kind of play with and address? And because that may open up for you where to start your journaling. So let's take a break and we'll be back. I am Dr. Tina. This is your Healing Playground on the Inspired Choices Network, and we are listening to Michelle Palermo, writer, producer, everything girl for Middlehood, new show on TV. Let's take our break.
Your Healing Playground is the space where science, spirit, and sensation dance together. Your host, Dr. Tina Cooper-Smith, physician, coach, healer, and play advocate, returns weekly to remind you that healing isn't just about pills and protocols. Western medicine is just one of many healing modalities. True wellness is about energy, emotion, pleasure, and play. On this show, Dr. Tina explores the playground of your body, mind, heart, and soul, from neuroscience to sensuality, from root chakra to real talk. She'll share tools, stories, and soulful strategies to shift you out of fear and back into joy. Because if you're alive and breathing, your story is still unwritten, and you deserve to write it with love. Together, you'll learn to breathe, feel, and play your way back to wellness, because you are your best healer.
Are you a subject matter expert? Are you here to share your expertise with an audience waiting to hear from you in only the way you can deliver? Are you ready to have your voice amplified across the airwaves? Inspire Choices Network has a global radio platform streaming to millions of people across the world. Professionally produced and supported by an accomplished team every step of the way, you can broadcast from anywhere in the world, knowing your voice matters, and we ensure it is delivered with ease and efficiency. Eager to hear your message, the world awaits. Contact us today to become an Inspire Choices Network radio host. Email becomeahost@inspirechoicesnetwork.com.
This is your healing playground with Dr. Tina Coopersmith. To participate in the program, join the live studio audience in our chat room at inspiredchoicesnetwork.com. You can also send an email to info@womensreproduction.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, my friends. You are listening to Your Healing Playground. I am Dr. Tina Coopersmith. We are on the Inspired Choices Network. And today we are discussing the intersection of story and healing with my guest and friend and acquaintance and just all around amazing human, Michelle Palermo. And I want to get into two themes, and if you will. One is, how did the writing and producing and all the stuff help you heal relationships and emotional, mental, physical, all of that? And simultaneously, how does the screen, be it a stage or the screen, provide actually a healing modality for all the people who watch? Okay, because I think it's both ways, right? You are gifting the world a healing modality. And you're using the modality, perhaps, to heal yourself as an actor, as a writer, as a producer, as a director, all of those things. So take it away, which one ever jazzes you first.
Well, I'll talk about the, let's talk about the healing from middlehood that I got.
Yeah.
From producing and writing. I mean, the writing was one thing, right? The writing was a very personal part of me kind of getting the story out. And middlehood takes a past present view every episode. And I go into each character, main character, the main family, into each character's past in each episode, right? In there's 8 episodes, 3 of them are Lisa, right? 3 of them are different times of Lisa's past. That's the character that's inspired by me. And then the other characters, the mom, the dad, and the 2 brothers that she actually has in her life, each have an episode where we go into their past. And that was the most healing thing throughout the process, because I wrote it, and then I got the funding together and directed it, cast it. It was really amazing to cast folks who were inspired by my family. And they kind of nailed certainly the heart of this family, right? We have an amazing cast, led by Elena Wool and Mark Espinosa, and just like the most amazing cast of actors ever. And they really got this family dynamic. And we have several casts of the same family. Right? Because there's the family in the 1980s, and then there's
You have the young right.
So we have several different actors playing one character. But it was really that. So then there was the moment of like having that weird thing where all of a sudden my mother and father walk on stage, but they're not my mother and father. They're actors, but they're acting like my mother and father. It was very interesting and kind of, shocking. And then I also edited the piece. So bringing it all back together, and, you know, it was really, I edited the piece out of not having enough money to hire an editor really at that point, because I, you know, self-funded a lot and done some fundraising and I was running out of money. So I actually edited the piece myself. And that was interesting too, because learning through editing and what you're choosing to show and what you're not choosing to show is a really powerful, by the way, that's one of the most powerful jobs, you know, and I did it instead of sitting behind somebody while they're doing it, because I'm kind of a control freak that way. But anyway, that idea of taking someone else's perspective.
Yeah.
Like, I think a lot of journaling is me, I think this, and that's very healthy and healing, you know. But there's also something, my little aha moment was how healing it is to take somebody else's point of view.
Yeah.
Right? And to realize that, like, to my little brothers, if I'm going back to being 12 when I'm with them, I am just a nag and I'm always causing problems and I'm, you know, bugging them and yelling at them and not, and that for no reason, right? Just because I was just didn't want them anywhere near me when I was a kid because they were little. And it really like opened my eyes. Like, I'm not the person to them that I think I am to them.
Ah.
No matter what we've dealt, there are moments when to them, I become exactly who I was when I was 14, which was not the nicest person in the world to them. And for example, then that was very, very insightful for me, like to understand that and how to heal a relationship from that place, right? And kind of not understand that we need to heal relationships either. Right. We're just plodding along and, you know, and it's when you take another perspective and you go, I wonder why we always get back to that same argument. Why do we always get back to this same argument, no matter how we start, happy, whatever?
I want to interrupt for one sec.
Yeah,
it's the same thing. So in my coaching world, right, as I got deeper and deeper into coaching and spirituality and some of the tools that were developed by Zivarod Slavinsky, who's a psychologist, and we use them, people come and we throw out the story, we work on the emotion, and you clear your own emotions. But then, okay, does someone else participate in this? And you actually put your finger on your chest point and you, okay, I'm not me anymore. Now I'm Michelle. What emotion is Michelle feeling in this experience? And you reprocess from them. And there's a great story as we were learning about some man who was in a bullfight, right? Or something, right? And he's got PTSD, right? And he's, you know, so he did it from himself and he did it from the man who owned the bull. And he did it, you know, and finally they had him as the point of view of the bull. And he processed himself as the bull.
Oh my goodness.
And it closed all the loop. And some of the other thoughts is that the mind, right, not consciousness, but the mind is made up of unfinished communications. And so when you are taking someone else's viewpoint and listening and hearing it, you are finishing that communication because there's so much left unsaid, right? And then as a teen and a teen girl in a house of boys,
yeah,
come on, in a family where at least in middlehood, like, let's get into the roles of what's the masculine role, the feminine role, and the generational changes in those roles. And you do such a good job in middlehood of each generation, right? Of really embodying the teen girls, the middle-aged girls, and the older woman, and what's acceptable behavior, and what is love, and what do you allow, and what don't you allow. It's really deep, right? And when you're going through puberty, you are trying to negotiate your past life, and you're really making a generational jump.
Well, it was so different. And that's another thing that I really learned about my own family from writing this, because it's really dedicated to my mom, who passed away in 2024, but this was all written before. She actually got to see some of it and loved.
Oh, good. She liked it.
She loved herself. Like she just.
Oh,
loved
I love it.
She just loved. She loved Lisa Goodman, who plays her as an older woman, and she just loved it. So, but you know, the fact that there are two things that very much influenced my family that we really didn't lean into that much. One was the fact that my parents were both immigrants after the war. And that's huge, you know. And then the fact that my mother and father both, I mean, it's really more, this is more my mother's focus, but that my mother and father grew up during the war in Europe and they had PTSD from the war.
Yeah.
My mother, you know, did an amazing job of being a mother, having grown up with a mother who was not that present for her because she had, you know, she had been through World War I and World War II, and she was completely incapable of dealing with things when bombs fell, right? And my mother was constantly having, like, so really understanding the influence that World War II had on my family in terms of-
Let's stop for a minute and just remind people, right, that the old thought processes, you just pushed your past behind, you kept going, and nobody ever, don't talk about the junk and the awfulness and the trauma you had, like button up, close your mouth and keep going. That was, you went crazy if you talked about it.
Yes. And the same thing with the immigration.
Oh yeah.
My parents immigrated to the United States. We weren't Italian or German. They wanted us to be American kids. We moved into a suburb and we barbecued. And, you know, there are these home movies of my dad and his brother, but both super Italian, like in these little Capri shorts with the little things, and they're barbecuing and flipping burgers. And, you know, and they didn't teach us Italian. And it was a very different way of looking at the American experience, right? It was just, you became like a white Anglo-Saxon Protestant when you moved to America back in when my parents came. And it was that, you know, just pretend, you know, people would say to my mom, you know, where are you from? And she had so much shame from being from Germany. She would go, you know, I'm an American. What do you mean? You know, it's like, mom, they're talking about your accent, right? Very strong accent. But you're right. It was all like, don't talk about it. The past is the past. You know, when I came home in third grade, I think, and said I needed to do a family tree, I almost got pulled out of school. They were like, why do they want to know your family? Why do they want to, you know?
Oh, interesting.
They had just come from Europe where they were always looking for, you know, some sort of connection to Judaism, right? In Italy and Germany. And my parents were, they were like, that's none of your business. And I was like, but I have to do it for my assignment.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, you know, we're going through that again, right? Where, so we need to think about the trauma of what does it mean? And what does it mean to be an American when we all came from somewhere else? What does it mean to be an American? American is immigration, except for the people whose land we stole.
Exactly. Every single person in this country is an immigrant,
someone,
except
right.
for the people whose land we stole, right? Talk about pushing that in the past.
Right.
Like, let's not look at that, you know?
Yeah. So this is a really good time to take a break. And it's been, I just can't wait to get back to talk to you some more. We will take our break. You are listening to Your Healing Playground. I am Dr. Tina Cooper-Smith. We are on the Inspired Choices Network, and we are talking about story writing and story making with Michelle Palermo today. So let's go to our break and come back, get out your journals, and maybe you'll be inspired to write your next TV show.
Your Healing Playground is the space where science, spirit, and sensation dance together. Your host, Dr. Tina Cooper-Smith, physician, coach, healer, and play advocate, returns weekly to remind you that healing isn't just about pills and protocols. Western medicine is just one of many healing modalities. True wellness is about energy, emotion, pleasure, and play. On this show, Dr. Tina explores the playground of your body, mind, heart, and soul. From neuroscience to sensuality, from root chakra to real talk, She'll share tools, stories, and soulful strategies to shift you out of fear and back into joy. Because if you're alive and breathing, your story is still unwritten, and you deserve to write it with love. Together, you'll learn to breathe, feel, and play your way back to wellness, because you are your best healer.
How wonderful would it be to carry your favorite Inspired Choices Network host with you throughout your day? Well, now you can. Inspired Choices Network now has its very own mobile app. Our free app offers live streaming shows, along with thousands of podcasts and TV episodes. Our shows cover a wide variety of topics. Whether you're waking up with us, carrying us through the day, and taking us to bed with you, we're always here for you to enjoy. We're easy to find. Just search for Inspired Choices Network in the Apple App Store or Google Play Store.
This is your healing playground with Dr. Tina Coopersmith. To participate in the program, join the live studio audience in our chat room at inspiredchoicesnetwork.com. You can also send an email to info@womensreproduction.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, my friends, my fellow people who like to play. We are with Michelle Palermo today talking about the intersection of story, narrative medicine as a healing modality. And Michelle is much more than a writer. As she said, she's had such a checkered career with so many different roles. And how does the screen help people heal? And what I was thinking about is you've had so many roles in entertainment and politics, you said, right? And yes. Everyone takes on a new identity, even in politics, right? Are they themselves, or are they the first lady, or the, you know, the politician role, right? And you took on all so many roles in Making Middlehood and your amazing production on TV, right? Because you're a writer, you're editor, you helped cast it, all that stuff. So again, your healing experience, but also the people involved and those playing in the industry and those watching. How do you give us an insight into what you think helps everybody just a little bit in terms of healing through art, because that's what it is, healing art.
Yes. And I think that for actors, for example, taking on a role, you embody that person, right? That incarnation of a character that the writer inspires you to, but the actor has a huge part in, you know, bringing this to life. I mean, it's just words on a page. It's the actor that's 3D. And I think that, you know, in my own experience as an actor, every role you take teaches you something. And I think in a television show, particularly, you have, like, you're a friend to people, because it's not just 90 minutes, or it's not just going to see a play, right? Even though many of those performances are just memorable forever. You know, there are certain performances I've seen on screen and stage that I'll never forget that changed me.
Right.
But certainly in a television show, you're with these people every week, you know, or you're binging.
You're right. They become part of your family.
They're in your living room.
They're literally in your living room.
Yes. Right. I mean, there's a really interesting quote from Shonda Rhimes, who did Grey's Anatomy. And she talks about how when Sandra Oh wanted to leave the show, right, that she really had to think about how she was going to exit her. And she said, because by the time Sandra wanted to leave, people had spent more time with the character of Christina than many had spent with their own families in those years. And so the goodbye had to be honoring that feeling. And I thought that still gives me chills just to say it. Like, there's something profound about that. And people get involved in television. That's kind of why I love that medium. You know, I love television because you can really develop character. And so I think as an actor, having a role that goes from, you know, episode to episode to episode, where you really sort of become this person, must change you in a certain way and change your worldview and let you see things in a different way.
Right.
And then certainly, you know, I think as an audience member, I have very specific views on television watching, and I mean, I am very much influenced by what I watch. For example, when I'm writing something, if I'm writing a horror movie, right, I have to watch a lot of horror movies in order to get in that headset, which says something.
So your mind becomes what we focus on. Yes. When I went on a retreat for 3.5 days, and literally we have to contemplate one question for 3.5 days when we're eating, when we're sleeping, when we're walking, when we're communicating. And let me tell you, you literally become the answer to your question. It was fascinating. I focused on I am love, and in 3.5 days, I'm like, no, I focus on what is love, and I became love. The people who focused on I am what is life, I am life. What is another? I am another. And you start this percolation of, oh my God, you've emptied out your brain. I mean, there's stuff we do to kind of get you there, but it was such an awareness that what you focus on, you become. And let me tell you, when Field of Dreams, when you build it, they will come. When you took tobacco peace pipes, but then you started advertising for cigarettes, people became addicted to cigarettes. Then we had alcohol commercials, and people became addicted to alcohol. Now it's medications.
Oh, yes.
And if you watch TV commercials, one of my mentors said this, watch the commercial without the words, and it's la, 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 la. Then listen. You could die. You could have suicidal thoughts. You could have every part of your organ break down, but people still want the drugs, and they end up getting the illnesses. So you become what you watch. If you're watching a horror, you become a maker of horror films because you're watching horror.
And that's the way you sort of see everything. And I use it as a tool. You have to use it carefully, even as a writer, because there is that little, like you said, there's that line between creativity and madness that we play all the time, right? Like, just because I'm writing about being a serial killer doesn't mean I become a serial killer, even though you get into that mindset and it kind of freaks you out. So the thing about watching that I'm finding now, right now in my life, because of, you know, the past couple of years have been just a lot of challenge for me. And so I'm really digging television shows that are kind. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I think that Middlehood is kind. I think that Middlehood is a very healing show. I wrote it to heal many things, family dynamics, but also, you know, we are so, speaking of a little bit about politics, you know, a lot of times television addresses politics as people running for office, right? But politics, the way that Americans, well, anybody in the world experiences them mostly, is how they influence your relationships with other people. And particularly nowadays, you know, politics is like, we are, you know, we just like hunker down and it's like, no, this is my belief and this is my belief, and we can't really even have a conversation.
And politics starts in the politics of your family as you're growing up. Yeah. Yes. How you relate to other humans. Can you understand their point of view? Can you be open and curious?
Yes. And so that is also part of it. It's like now when families can't even get together for a dinner because of politics influencing family, politics influencing politics, it Middlehood actually addresses some of those things kind of head on. And I was really proud to do that sort of in an homage to All in the Family, which was one of
classics.
One of favorite shows. I hated it growing up because it reminded me of that. But I, you know, I as an adult, I love that show. But I love shows like there's a show called Somebody Somewhere on HBO with Bridget Everett and Jeff Miller, who's just been nominated for an Emmy. That's just one of the kindest shows ever. It's just it makes you feel good about the world. Shrinking is another one that when you watch it. And I think that's what it is. You're steeped in that feeling. You're steeped in those characters. And when you see people caring about each other and being kind to each other, and it doesn't mean it's soft. You know, I think a lot of times in entertainment, we're like, oh, that's soft or that's dramedy or, you know, I like edgy. And we got very much into edgy. And all of a sudden, every character on television was a sociopath.
Right. It's a problem with, well, video gaming and violence and kids, like not the ramifications. We become more violent as a nation when we get immune to it. Oh, it's just another school shooting. What are you freaking kidding me? Like, that is not okay, right? And that we can allow it to keep going on, right? And it does, it, yes, it's the human who commits the crime, but we're not guilty of giving them so much information into their brain that gets intercalated into their brain, and we have to start taking responsibility for a community of what is the information and how is it being delivered and to children and adults, etc. And yeah, sorry, I'm going off topic because along. And I want to say there's some amazing shows right now, especially you talked about the middle years and your teen years, right? It's a British show called Sex Education. And it's phenomenal. And, you know, we don't get education. We don't teach children really about sex at all. And so I always joke I just spent my weekend with my sexuality coaching crew and as a gynecologist, right, learning these things. And the doctors were just taught to fear sex, right? Sex kills. Sex causes disease. Pregnancy kills, you know. And so, no, but sex is healing. Sex is adult play. I'm talking about playgrounds. Playgrounds is where we heal. And sex ed is the story of teenagers. And the one kid's mom is a sex counselor. And so he becomes the counselor for his friends. And he's like parroting his mom, you know, but he's really good at it. But he knows nothing about sex. He's never had sex, you know. But they delve so well and deeply into teaching in this great scenario. And there's one scenario of this guy, and he is with his partner and he flakes and he can't do, you know, and I don't even know what douching is, if I'm supposed to douche and da da da. And he's like, if you can't talk to the person you're about to have sex with about how to have sex, you shouldn't be having sex with this human. Like, you know, and it was just like, oh, what a concept. Communication, yeah, before sexuality, right? So anyway, sidetrack. But so the writers get to play with their story. The actors get to feel the roles and the directors are playing with both, right? What about the editor who completely changes, if you put, depending on the music and the soundtrack and what you put together, what does the editor get? And then we have to take our last break.
Well, the editor gets, I mean, you know, the editor generally doesn't get a whole lot of freedom. I did, because I was also the director, because the editor basically has a director sitting behind them. So they're basically writing. But that process, that post-production process, you know, bringing in the composer, bringing in the additional music that you put in, you know, it really flavors it. It really, you know, and a lot of times you don't want to play right into the feeling of the thing. You want to play a juxtaposition. You want to play opposite it. It really, you build an emotional world that you want people to step into. And you can really, you know, music is unbelievable in its power to change, you know, our hearts. Probably the strongest, I would say.
Well, all we are molecules dancing in space, and we vibrate. And way back when with the original Torah, right? You don't say it, you sing it. And if you think of, you go to India, you chant. It's a chanting, right? And I don't know what they do in Buddhism, but I feel like that's chanting, it's singing. We are vibrational molecules at our core. And how we vibrate, you know, the butterfly's wings affects a tsunami somewhere else. Every smile, you may save someone's life by smiling at someone because they feel better. They don't go home. They don't hit their wife. They're not in road rage, right? Because they don't get in a car accident because they're no longer in road rage, right? So the littlest vibrational change you can make in a human can change the entire world.
And that's why I think it's important when you're putting together a show to make sure that everybody that's coming in is a positive vibe. You really make sure that you don't have any bad seeds in there. And if you find them, get rid of them.
All right. We're going to talk about that after break. That's a really interesting piece. All right, we're going to take our last break. You are listening to Your Healing Playground. I am Dr. Tina Cooper-Smith. We are on the Inspired Choices Network, and we are talking about the intersection of storytelling, story writing, story making with Michelle Palermo. She has put out Middlehood on TV. Go watch it. It's amazing. Bring it into your living room, and let us take our last break for today.
Your Healing Playground is the space where science, spirit, and sensation dance together. Your host, Dr. Tina Cooper-Smith, physician, coach, healer, and play advocate, returns weekly to remind you that healing isn't just about pills and protocols. Western medicine is just one of many healing modalities. True wellness is about energy, emotion, pleasure, and play. On this show, Dr. Tina explores the playground of your body, mind, heart, and soul. From neuroscience to sensuality, from root chakra to real talk, she'll share tools, stories, and soulful strategies to shift you out of fear and back into joy. Because if you're alive and breathing, your story is still unwritten, and you deserve to write it with love. Together, you'll learn to breathe, feel, and play your way back to wellness because you are your best healer. This is Your Healing Playground with Dr. Tina Cooper-Smith. To participate in the program, join the live studio audience in our chat room at inspiredchoicesnetwork.com. You can also send an email to info@womensreproduction.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back, my friends. You are back to Your Healing Playground. It is a time to play with me, your host, Dr. Tina Cooper-Smith. We are on the Inspired Choices Network. If you're enjoying this show, please, 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 can I say that again? Please, please, please give me a 5-star review on iTunes. Search for Your Healing Playground. Let's get this information out to all our friends so we all can play on this big planet. And today I'm speaking with Michelle Palermo. She has put out Middlehood on TV, and we're talking about the intersection of healing and story. And she popped a really interesting piece for our last segment about weeding out the weeds and getting rid of the negative juju, the negative energy that may infect a production or may infect an office or may infect, you know, it's the juju of your life. We're full of bacteria, and most of them are there for our health. And every once in a while, there's some bad juju. It may show up as a cancer. It may show up as an infection. And we have to get rid. My father was a surgeon, right? We got to get rid of it. I'm starting to call myself a surgeon of the soul to kind of get rid of the juju. So even in a production, there can be negative energy that needs to be cleared. So how do you tactfully notice the weed and pluck it in the right manner or change it? Right? Weeds, dandelions are very healthy, and yet we call them weeds. Mint grows like weeds, but it's really healthy, right? So how can we change a weed into a beautiful flower? And when do we know when to just weed the garden and get rid of it?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that question. But I do know that it's really important. You know, I think the lesson of the last 2 years for me has been about boundaries. You know, we teach little girls to be kind and generous and loving and things, and then we don't teach them about boundaries. And, you know, one of my pride, my most proud thing, my proudest things is that I always have a very happy set. I love being on set. I love what I do. And I love bringing people on set who also love being there. And when I sense that somebody doesn't want to be there anymore, I mean, I keep my actors very, I cast very well, and my actors are very happy. So generally that hasn't happened with an actor, but it has happened with, you know, certain crew members or people in post or whatever. And you just have to, you have to realize that you can't, in order to create, if you have a bad situation, it will, especially with a personality like mine, because I loop things, as you know, I have to get rid of it, and I have to be okay with the consequences of getting rid of it. I have to be okay with feeling like I maybe hurt somebody's feelings, or, you know, I try to not, but, you know, you have to be, you have to, when you're carrying a project like this all the way to the finish line, for me, it became about this thing getting finished, and this thing getting finished in a beautiful way, and not giving me any more illness than I already kind of put it, you know, just to let it slip out, which you already know. I was diagnosed with breast cancer last year. And I think a lot of that was from the stress, not of the show. It was the stress of trying to get rid of bad juju that came along with trying to finish the show. And so I've gotten really good at it now. You know, I
So
really
can I play with that just
yeah.
because I joke and yet I want to let my audience know and we don't have much time to. I really feel dis-ease in the body is the language of the bacteria that are our body because that we're more bacteria than human. And it's the trying to help us manipulate and maneuver back into alignment. And so Brett, and then metaphysically, why does it show up in one organ, not another? And so you mentioned boundaries. So I'm just gifting you the thought that your body loved you so much. The breast is the nurturing, where we nurture ourselves and others. It's all about self-love and having boundaries and accepting that I can have a boundary and I'm fully allowed to say no. That you don't belong in my world right now. It doesn't mean you're a bad human, but I'm allowed to have boundaries for my world. And so I just invite you that your cancer was just your conversation with yourself. It wasn't here to kill you, it's here to make you bigger, better, stronger, and say, having boundaries is what I need for me to love myself. And I have to love myself back to wholeness and healing.
Yes, completely. I agree with you. That's exactly what it was. And it was like, you know, really was a lesson. And I'm healthier now than I was 20 years ago. I really took it as a way to heal inside and out and kind of create a world in which I, you know, I do the things that make me healthy, both spiritually and physically and mentally. And I, you know, I take time to do those things, and I take space to do those things.
And we have an epidemic in our country of cancer and infertility, both. I see it both. I got the breast cancer patients, the infertility patients. And to me, it is the canary in the coal mine and a gift to our society, which is why I'm doing this podcast, because we need to heal our society so that we play more. And work is play, but we need to work to remember to play, and we need to ensure that we're playing at work and not stressing over the deadlines and who we work with, where, like, work is a made-up story. All we're here to do on the planet is to survive and reproduce. And work is the story that we've been telling ourselves is so important. So let's tell ourselves it has to be play and pleasure. And we work ideally in flow and play and pleasure. And that's how we stay healthy. healthy. And we need to sign off. This has been, I could talk to you for hours. I even want to get into the divine masculine and the divine feminine, which is in Middlehood. Oh, yeah. Please watch Middlehood for Michelle.
If you felt something move today, a molecule, a mindset, or your mood, that's healing. Your body listens to your stories, your thoughts, your breath. So speak to yourself with kindness, play with curiosity, and let your nervous system know it's safe to rest. Dr. Tina returns Monday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central, 9 Mountain, 8 Pacific on InspiredChoicesNetwork.com. Remember, pleasure is a practice. And play is your medicine.